time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Doug Bernard reporting. President Donald Trump says Americans have grown weary without a victory in Afghanistan. But he says a hasty exit of U.S. troops there would create a vacuum quickly filled by terrorists. The president made his comments in an address to the nation Monday night, unveiling his new strategy for Afghanistan and South Asia. Mr. Trump said the U.S. must seek an honorable and enduring outcome worthy of the tremendous sacrifices that have been made, especially the sacrifices of lives. Mr. Trump said the security threats in Afghanistan and the broader South Asia region are immense. He said the new strategy will include a regional approach for South Asia, in which the U.S. will seek improved relations with India. He said the U.S. will take a tougher stance against Pakistan, which he accused of acting as a safe haven for, quote, agents of chaos, violence, and terror. The president did not give a timeline for U.S. troop involvement in Afghanistan, saying the new strategy would shift from a time-based approach to one based on conditions on the ground. He also did not specify an increase in U.S. troop levels in that country. At 16 years, Afghanistan is the longest U.S. war. A rocket landed in the heart of the government and diplomatic area in Afghanistan's capital of Kabul just hours before Mr. Trump was scheduled to make his strategy announcement for the war in the South Asian nation. Police said the rocket landed late Monday on a secure road just outside the presidential palace near an area housing Afghanistan government offices, foreign embassies, and the headquarters of the military coalition. This is VOA. Police in Spain have shot dead a man that they believe was the driver of Thursday's deadly van attack in Barcelona. Ending a massive manhunt, police killed Yunus Abu Yaqub after confronting him Monday in a rural area known for its vineyards about 45 kilometers west of Barcelona. Authorities say they shot the fugitive after he held up what appeared to be a bomb belt, which they later discovered was fake. Catalan Interior Minister Joaquim Forn told Catalunya Radio that everything indicates Abu Yaqub was behind the wheel of that van during Thursday's Barcelona attack that killed 15 people. The U.S. Navy is promising to take a much more aggressive stance as it tries to determine what led to a second collision between a U.S. guided missile destroyer and a commercial vessel in as many months. 10 American sailors are missing and 5 others injured, with the USS John McCain sustaining significant damage as a result of Monday's collision with a tanker near the Strait of Malacca. Photos released by the U.S. Navy show a gaping hole below the waterline on the USS McCain's port side. A statement from the U.S. 7th Fleet said the damage was significant and that some sleeping areas and communication rooms flooded as a result. In a response to the incident, the Navy ordered an immediate operational pause across the U.S. fleet. Chief of Naval Operations Admiral John Richardson said the pause was necessary. The United States and South Korea began their annual military exercises Monday, with officials describing the largely computer-simulated war games as largely defensive in nature. The drills always draw objections from North Korea, which sees them as a rehearsal for an invasion. In Sunday's edition of North Korea's state-run newspaper, officials said President Trump and South Korean President Moon Jae-in are, quote, playing with fire by holding the drills and aggravating the already tense situation on the Korean Peninsula. At a cabinet meeting Monday, Moon said North Korea's continued provocations make the military exercises necessary. The United States will stop the issuing of all non-immigrant visas from Russia starting Wednesday to September 1st, according to the U.S. Embassy in Moscow. The embassy says the move is due to Russian government-imposed caps on its staff level, according to a fact sheet on the U.S. Embassy's website. And millions of people across the United States watched a rare total eclipse, which darkened skies from the Pacific to the Atlantic for the first time in 99 years. That's the news this hour. I'm Doug Bernard.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Tuesday, August 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today, Tuesday, is the day of reflections as Angolans prepare for an important election tomorrow, Wednesday.
Milton Silva Neto, the National Electoral Commission president, just a couple of hours ago made a statement calling for peaceful elections to Wednesday.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai in Luanda. We have a report on some Angolans who will be voting for a new leader for the first time in 38 years. Zambia's main opposition takes issue with SADC for endorsing the 2016 election as free and fair. And South Sudan orders the UN-backed Regional Protection Force stationed near Juba Airport to relocate.
If you are a guest coming to my house, you are supposed to ask me where you will put up, but you don't come and choose where to put up or where to sleep. Even in a hotel, you don't just move into rooms, but you check in so that you are given your room.
Michael Makui, South Sudan's information minister, activists in Guinea-Bissau plan new strategies amid a ban on political protests. And Kenyan girls use technology to combat female genital mutilation. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Today, Tuesday, is the so-called Day of Reflection as Angolans prepare for an important election tomorrow, Wednesday. The poll is essential in that it is the first time in 38 years that longtime leader José Eduardo dos Santos is not seeking re-election. The ruling MPLA party, in power since independence from Portugal in 1975, is expected to win Wednesday's election. But Angola's third leading party, CASA CE, announced on Monday evening it will use a computer program to calculate results based on data from its own delegates at polling stations. The party says this is necessary to minimize the chances of ballot rigging. Meanwhile, veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavail says National Electoral Commission Chair Andre de Silva Neto on Monday evening called for a peaceful election.
Mr. Silva Neto, the National Electoral Commission president, just a couple of hours ago made a statement calling for peaceful elections next Wednesday. The electoral campaign just ends this Monday at 0 hours. And according to the law, tomorrow, Tuesday, will be the so-called reflection days, saying that no kind of campaign will be allowed and the citizens must be so quiet and calm, reflecting about the proposal of all party candidates. But I must underline that the situation is becoming more and more tense. There was also a press release for the army staff chief condemning allegations from UNITA and other opposition parties there, because there are some movements of battalions from one province for another. But according to the army staff chief, these movements are natural to allow some military men to vote in their original provinces. So the tension is becoming more and more high, despite all this calling for a peaceful climate.
Mario, hello? What can you tell us about the opposition CASA CE said on Monday that it will use a computer program to minimize the chances of ballot rigging for Wednesday's election, saying that this will help prevent any irregularities? Do you know about that?
Yes, I've got information. A top member of CASA CE said to the press that they set up a coordinating body to the elections. So, of course, it will be based on computer, but it will be based also by their own delegates in all polling states. So they will make a parallel counter voting on their own. But this kind of initiative, if the coalition will announce before the official result of the National Electoral Commissions, as we have experienced before, two or three, if I'm not wrong, two or three elections before, we raise some problems. But there was a strong announcement from CASA CE saying that we'll be firm setting up their own scrutiny body to counter the votes. And they will check and will compare with official results. This is another political matter that rising tensions here in Angola. We will see how the things will go on, but there are more and more worries in the observer side with all these last-minute developments.
Do you think the Electoral Commission will appreciate that?
What I'm saying is, according to the experience on Angola and in other African countries, this parallel vote counting, if the numbers will not be similar, will rise tensions. But we will see in the coming days how the things are going on. Because apart from that, a number of civil society organizations are monitoring the process. And I think that time, the final results must come across some kind of things more close to the reality. Otherwise, we could expect some tension.
Mario, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jay.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaivai. He was speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. For the majority of Angola's 29 million people, President José Eduardo dos Santos is the only leader they have ever known. Now, as he steps aside after nearly four decades, many Angolans are preparing to vote for their very first time. Viewers Anita Powell reports from Luanda.
Until this year, Ana Maria Espiritu Santos Montero never registered to vote. The 60-year-old saw no reason, because for the last 38 years, Angola has been ruled by President dos Santos, who was accused of rigging elections in his favor. But with dos Santos not running for re-election this time, Montero says she is excited.
Eu vou votar pela primeira vez.
Montero tells VOA she is going to vote for the first time because she believes the electoral ruses will not be on such a great scale and hopes this election will be transparent and fair. She favors the Casa-Se opposition party, which started in 2012 and has 8 seats in parliament. The party faces tough competition from the MPLA, which has ruled the country since independence in 1975. The party has nominated Foreign Minister João Lourenço to be dos Santos' successor. Many younger first-time voters are frustrated with the MPLA, which they blame for the country's economic inequality. 27-year-old student Luis Gabriel says he cannot find work and seems glad to see dos Santos step aside.
I think this year will be different because dos Santos is not running.
Vendor Nyama Yamba says she earns just over $1 a day selling cheap shoes at an illegal roadside market. The 25-year-old says the country expects better things from whoever is picked as dos Santos' successor. Angolans want a new president to organize the country so they will live well, she says. But not all first-time voters want change. 36-year-old Gaspar Domingos says he is sticking with the establishment.
I'm very expectant, yeah, because I believe that the MPLA is the big family, you know? It's the first community that have a long story.
Critics of dos Santos do not think there will be much change and say the ruling party has intimidated voters. Investigative journalist Rafael Marques has long been a critic of dos Santos.
These elections are essentially just a process because we already know what the results are. And most of the population also knows what the results are. And the question is whether MPLA will try to understand how this affected, how unhappy the population is, and give more space to the opposition.
Under Angolan electoral rules, the top candidate of the winning party becomes president. Opposition leaders are hopeful ahead of Wednesday's election, but polls predict an MPLA win. Anita Powell, VOA News, Luanda, Angola.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 22nd. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, says it disagrees with the Southern African Development Community, SADC, over the group's decision to endorse the 2016 general election as free and fair. During the recently concluded summit in South Africa, SADC officially congratulated Zambian President Edgar Lungu for winning the presidential vote. The UPND has rejected the outcome of the poll, saying they were rigged. Charles Kakoma, spokesman for the UPND, tells VOA's Peter Clotty that it appears the regional bloc always backs any incumbent president in the Southern African region, irrespective of voting irregularities.
Noted that some international observers that came for the 2016 elections did indeed say that the elections were credible or free and fair. But that we challenged because the irregularities that were noticed in the electoral process, and that is the more reason why we went to the Constitutional Court to challenge the election, because there are so many illegalities that were conducted. So while as the international observers can make their observations based on what they have seen, some of the things they could not have seen. For example, they may not have seen or indeed ignored the one of the events that happened at the Electoral Commission of Zambia, where somebody, a foreigner from Uganda, was allowed access to that computer server and started manipulating the electronic results.
Doesn't the endorsement of the outcome of the general election, saying that it was free, fair, and credible, undercut your argument that the election was rigged?
Well, surprisingly, what we've seen is that SADC has never gone to a fellow SADC country and declared any elections not free and fair. They appear to be supporting each other. So even in Zimbabwe, they also go there and say the elections are free and fair when everybody knows that they are not. So therefore, we think this is a club that tends to support one another. The heads of state tend to support one another. And obviously, from the citizens of SADC, they are receiving a lot of criticism as not standing up to the task.
President Edgar Lungu suggested that it will benefit the two opposition political parties' leadership to meet him and have a one-on-one talk. Is the UPND ready to hold a one-on-one talk with President Edgar Lungu without any preconditions?
Well, this dialogue process has been initiated by the Commonwealth, and we are waiting for the special envoy that has been appointed to lead us through that process. If that process includes a one-on-one negotiation, that will be looked at. But for now, we don't know what approach the special envoy that has been appointed by the Commonwealth Secretary General is going to take.
Your leader, Hakainde Hichilema, was released from prison after treason charges were dropped against him. What is next for the UPND now that he's out?
Well, for us, I think that releasing Hakainde Hichilema was just one step. The next step is that of dialogue. We want to restore people's freedoms and people's rights. We want to restore democracy in this country. And we want to reform the electoral process. There are so many things that need to be done, and that is going to be part of the dialogue that has been initiated by the Commonwealth.
Charles Kakoma is spokesman for Zambia's main opposition UPND party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital Lusaka. The head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan says the government has ordered the UN-backed regional protection force stationed near the Juba airport to relocate. David Shearer says he doesn't understand why the government has introduced new conditions contrary to the mandate of the UN fourth peacekeeping mission. Michael Atit reports from Juba.
The head of UNMISS, David Shearer, says the regional protection force is deployed close to the Juba airport because UNMISS needs to access the airport to quickly respond to threat calls in any part of the country.
It's there for good reason because we have many flights going in and out and around the country, delivering humanitarian goods and peacekeepers and that sort of thing. So that's the reason it's there. But I think we just need to sit down and work out the way forward together. I don't think there's a necessarily huge issue.
The Regional Protection Force is mandated by the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2304 to protect the airport, to ensure the airport remains operational and protect the key facilities in Juba essential to the well-being of the people of Juba. Shearer says The RPF's mandate was clearly stated in the resolution, including protecting key installations and institutions in the country, including Juba International Airport.
We've got a little way to go to discuss it because the RPF's coming in only very gradually. And the RPF really is not going to be a separate force. It's going to be part of UNMISS.
South Sudan military spokesman Brigadier General Lul Roy Kong admits South Sudan has reservations over the UN's decision to station the RPF near the airport. He says RPF commanders should stick to the terms of a Statute of Forces agreement signed with Juba in 2011.
You know, the agreement says that we should know what they are bringing into the country in terms of organic weapons, in terms of personal rifles, in terms of all the equipment. We should have an inventory, and it is required wherever you go in the whole world.
Roy says the RPF has violated the Status of Forces Agreement known as SOFA. Government spokesman and Information Minister Michael Makwei says he does not understand why the RPF is stationed at Tongping near the airport. Makwei insists the South Sudan government has the final say in where the UN Regional Protection Force should be based in South Sudan.
If you are a guest coming to my house, you are supposed to ask me where you will put up, but you don't come and choose where to put up or where to sleep. Even in a hotel, you don't just move into rooms, but you check in so that you are given your room.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan have resumed flights after South Sudan refused to grant security clearance on Friday. UNMISS says the body applies in advance for clearance to fly in South Sudan. The UN says some applications for clearance were not approved by Juba last week, which resulted into the grounding of UNMISS flights on Friday and Sunday. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
With protests virtually prohibited in Guinea-Bissau, activists met last week to figure out new ways to address their leaders about the ongoing political crisis. This month marks 2 years since Guinea-Bissau's national government has been paralyzed by political infighting. Carlos de Silva is a spokesman for the Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens. He talks to Ricky Stryak about the group's ongoing efforts to resolve the crisis.
In this meeting, we have as the aims, which means that to thinking about our movement in the present, but also to project the future. Because right now, the government in place, they interdict any kind of protest. Whenever anyone or any movement want to organize any kind of protest, they put the police everywhere, and they even doesn't accept the people to join together.
So have you guys developed a different way to address the government other than protesting?
Yes. When we had a meeting yesterday is to set new strategies, how we can address them. And among of the strategy we set up was, for example, to do different meeting in a different neighborhood, in a different regions, you know, to wake up the conscience of the people, the population, you know. And this is one of the strategies we want to do to drive them. Also, we are writing, for example, we are addressing to the UN and ECOWAS, you know, to tell them what's going on to, you know, our rights. And in our constitution, they said that every movement, every population who wants to join together, you know, to claim for the rights, they are free. But now they are blocking us, and it's not normal. That's why we're also preparing a judicial process against our government and ECOWAS tribunal.
What is the status of the government? Is it coming up on 2 years that they have still not reached an agreement for a prime minister and aren't really, the parliament's not meeting?
Yes, it's correct. It's 2 years already, August 12, 2015. It's already 2 years. Since then, no parliament. They haven't convened the parliament since then. And we have already five governments. And also, we do not have any budget being adopted in the parliament. No national program being adopted in the program. And even 2 weeks ago, the civil servant unions, they did a strike for 3 days you know, we have a lot of problems going on in the country, and that's not normal, it's not fair. And we are not fighting against this, our political leaders, as they thought. We are fighting. We want to make them to understand we have chosen democracy, and we have to respect democracy.
That was Carlos De Silva, spokesman for the Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens in Guinea-Bissau. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from the capital, Bissau. At least 200 million girls and women have undergone female genital mutilation in 30 countries. And according to UNICEF, 44 million are girls 14 years old and younger. One group of Kenyan teens is standing up to this ancient so-called rite of passage and offering would-be victims a possible life-saving alternative, an app. Dina Mitchell reports from Silicon Valley, California.
It's still fresh in my mind, the scene of female genital mutilation. The pain of having your clitoris cut simply because someone wants to have you go through a rite of passage. It's painful and no one wants to listen to you. You cry and there you are, almost dying, but nobody is caring about that.
These teenage girls from Kenya call themselves the Restorers. Although their tribe does not practice female genital mutilation, or FGM, they are pitching a technology they developed to help other girls fight back against the archaic custom where all a part of a woman's clitoris is cut out.
I think for teenagers to be able to identify problems around them and provide a solution, that is really, really inspiring.
The Kenyan teens participated in the Technovation Challenge, which invites girls from around the world to compete using technology to solve problems in their communities. They created an app called iCut, allowing victims to send for help if they suspect they might be the target of FGM.
Around the place you are.
200 million girls in 30 countries have been cut. Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, where FGM is concentrated. Therefore, FGM is a global concern.
I had a friend who had to drop out of school because of female genital mutilation. And when I got the chance to work on this application, I had to do it because of what happened to my friend.
Though their app has the potential to save lives, it has not been embraced by all Kenyans.
One village elder drove 6 hours to their school to protest the app because, according to him, that's an African culture and the girls are being, according to him, westernized.
The new app comes at a time when some are protesting women in technology, and not just in Kenya, but even at the Google headquarters where the competition is being held. Google CEO Sundar Pichai made an unplanned appearance at the event.
I know the journey won't always be easy, but to the girls who dream of being an engineer or an entrepreneur and who dream of creating amazing things, I want you to know that there's a place for you in this industry. There's a place for you at Google. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
The Restorers did not win Technovation Challenge, but they will continue their fight against FGM and hope to get their app into the Google Play Store soon. Dina Mitchell for VOA News, Mountain View, California.
That's it for this Tuesday, August 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts covering Africa and the world news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss why ailing African leaders often travel abroad for their medical care. Should this be an acceptable practice? will delve into the issue on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.